Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz. Welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. It is the beginning, the official beginning of summer of 2014. This is the, I struggle to explain the exact facts of it, but this would be the lunar summer beginning. If I remember right from what Terry Spies says, the meteorological summer works this way. June, July, August, summer. September, October, November, fall. Winter, December, January, February. Spring, March, April, and May. Right. That's the meteorological. We know that sometimes winter begins in October and lasts until May or June. And matter of factly, this year, it certainly felt like we didn't get much of a spring. We kind of got robbed on spring. And that's kind of our short-term memory speaks to us in that regard, that we got robbed of spring. But I always try to look at things in the glass half full. Is maybe since spring was so short, spring was so tardy on arrival, could that mean that summer will last even longer? I think most of us hope so. Could that mean that fall will last longer, or winter won't arrive as quickly? I've been told by the Terry Spies and the Mick Cares of the world that really doesn't mean a lot, unfortunately. That's the unfortunate scientific truth, is that a delayed spring doesn't mean a longer summer, or a short summer doesn't mean a longer fall or less winter. We wish that it worked that way, but that brings us to the premise that we try to jam so much of summer into as much as we possibly can, and the glass half empty folks look at the 4th of July in a couple of weeks and go, well, then it's the countdown to school starting, and when the kids start practice in August, then they are 2 weeks away from school starting. That's just way too depressing for me. If you look at how wonderful some of our Septembers are, remember last September and how hot it was? And schools were being let out because it was so hot and it was so humid and there wasn't air conditioning in Fargo schools. Some of the Fargo elementary schools. September can be very warm. October. We had a winter in 2012 where people, Al Crochet, I'll never forget that picture, in January, shore fishing on Lake Elsie in his shorts. I'll probably be talking about this for years and years, of the winter of 2012. Could that happen again? We've got a lot of summer to enjoy before that. As you spend time outdoors this summer, we've been talking about aquatic nuisance species on this program for years. And we'll continue to talk about aquatic nuisance species because there's a constant ongoing concern and a threat to the future health of our fisheries and our fishing waters with aquatic nuisance species. Fred Reichman is aquatic nuisance specialist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Fred, let's start with an explanation of aquatic nuisance species.
Yeah, aquatic nuisance species are simply, and again, they're discussed in a number of agencies and other states, they're invasive species, so aquatic invasive species, but basically they're species that are new to an area or invasive, not natural in their environment that they're in. And as such, they're not just invasives that, like a pheasant or something that's invasive but good, but aquatic invasives or aquatic nuisance species are invasive species or damaging species that are not where they belong. And particularly in aquatic nuisance species, they're aquatic plants, animals that have moved into North Dakota that we surely wished weren't here. We have a few species that are in North Dakota right now. We certainly wished we didn't have any, but we do. But Again, there's the zebra mussel concerns in the Red River Valley. We found a few immatures there a few years ago, potential for them to become established. We documented the presence of silver carp in the James River. That's certainly not good to have them there. We've got curly leaf pondweed in a number of water bodies, and then Eurasian water milfoil is another one that we've documented, but it's just basically a toehold in North Dakota at present. So.
Fred, for a lot of our Minnesota listeners, they've been dealing with zebra mussels, and North Dakota continues to monitor and have concerns because of how close zebra mussels are to establishing themselves in our backyard.
Oh man, they're really getting close. They're abundant in a few spots in Minnesota. They're in the Otter Tail River in Minnesota, which drains into the Red at Wahpeton, and so there's a lot of concern about that population continuing to seed young villagers of young mussels downstream into the Red River. Last year, the province of Manitoba found them in Lake Winnipeg, and so they've been moving around. And there's concern that they may have become established in the Red River, since we're just going to be inoculated with them every year with invasives coming down from the Otter Tail. In fact, most invasives, their problems are very prolific, and so they just can reproduce very rapidly, become established in tremendous populations, and cause a lot of problems. But they're plankton feeders. They can interrupt that food chain from a plankton standpoint and basically consume all the plankton and not allow the plankton to be there for a lot of native fish and other plants or another zooplankton that needs that phytoplankton food base, so they can disrupt the food chain, cause a lot of problems. And they're very easily transported. Yeah, zebra mussel and then a very close relative, quagga mussels, have moved into the southwest part of the United States. They've moved around in a lot of areas, and they've become well established in a number of sites across the country now.
Fred Reichman, aquatic nuisance species biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Zebra mussels, as we mentioned, and I know from my work and from where I live how much attention, rightfully so, that zebra mussels and aquatic nuisance species are garnering. And it's not just a Minnesota issue. And what I find very interesting is it seems like in places that don't have zebra mussels, and then this is a generalization, and I'm sure people can argue with what I'm about to say, is that oftentimes we're not as concerned about it until it happens in our own backyard, until our own lake. Trust me, I know from what I've heard from lake associations in Minnesota how concerned people are because it's so close. And at the same time, you also hear frustration from boaters that don't want to have to deal with the rules and the regulations, or anglers with the rules and regulations about transporting water and transporting fish in live wells. They get frustrated by that. And at the same point, it's for the long-term benefit and health of the fishery. It's really quite interesting to dig into to that thought process. On one hand, anglers and boaters going, it's such a pain to have to buy ice, to transport our fish on ice because we can't transport them in the live well. But then if you had zebra mussels, you might be singing a different tune. What happens when you are faced with a new aquatic nuisance species? From a Game and Fish Department point of view, Fred Reichman answers that when we return. It's the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on this weekend edition of Outdoors Live, we'll get you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale, a Minnesota Outdoors report with CJ Johnson. But we are visiting with Fred Reichman. He's aquatic nuisance species biologist for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And I find it interesting when I look back from my perspective, when I started with the Game and Fish Department, not 100 years ago, as some people might guess, but I started as a district game warden in 1996 in Botno. So it's getting close to 20 years. It's getting close to 20 years with the Game and Fish Department. And at that time, you kind of knew of potential threats. I remember specifically, and I don't remember the years, but I believe it was a Eurasian water milfoil discovery in the Cheyenne River near the Chautauqua Park in Valley City. I don't remember the year of that. I know the problem with bullheads growing up on Lake Lemoore and Lake Ashtabula as an invasive and undesirable species. And over the course of the past 20 years or so, if you look at the amount of resources that have been dedicated to education, information, enforcement, and all things to do with curly leaf pondweed, zebra mussels, tamarisk, salt cedar on the Missouri River system, we have a specific position for invasive species. Minnesota has more than that. Not saying that we can completely remove invasive species and never have to worry about them again, and the biologists can go back to doing different types of fisheries work. Other than that, I think it would be very, very Pollyanna for anyone to try to convince me that somewhere 20 years from now, invasive species won't be an issue. In fact, it's probably going to be more of an issue when you hear of some of the snakehead fish and some of the other threats. With as mobile of a world we are, it's not just ships going out of Lake Superior and bringing back zebra mussels from across the ocean. And that's not going to change. So there's been an amazing amount of resources utilized to battle invasive species. Fred Reichman, aquatic nuisance species biologist. What as an agency can be done when you're faced with these threats?
Right. Well, it depends on the species, but there's certainly some avenues. But unfortunately, I guess the general consensus is that there's not much you can do once they've become established. It's extremely difficult to remove them, especially from flowing waters and larger water bodies. It's really difficult. Smaller isolated water bodies, you might have a chance. Eurasian water milfoil and Dead Colt Creek, for instance, down in Ransom County, we drew the water level down several feet for three winters in a row, trying to get that aquatic plant to freeze out. Apparently we're successful. We haven't been able to find that plant there for the last couple of years. Again, whether there's some strands there, whether it's still there or not, but at least it's certainly an extremely low abundance and hasn't caused us any problems there if it's still there. So there are a few success stories about eradications or elimination projects, but not very many. Typically what you have, you have to try to live with.
Fred, years ago when I started an outreach, moved from game warden into outreach and information and education, it was suggestions and requests from the public. And that changed dramatically in the last 10 years because these are no longer recommendations for anglers, boaters, recreation. These are legislative mandates, laws, rules and regulations that people need to adhere to, aren't they?
Right. Well, in particular, we're trying to prevent the movement by recreational watercrafts, by fishermen, by other water users. And so what the legislature has done, what we've requested, is simply some common sense rules to try to prevent that movement from one water body to another. So draining the live wells and draining all the water from your bilges, other places, pull your plugs, drain all the water for sure, eliminates a lot of potential for moving stuff in the standing water body or standing water in your containers. So drain everything, certainly remove all the vegetation. The curly leaf pondweed in particular can attach and be moved very easily by boat trailers from one water body to another. So we required that all vegetation be removed from the boat trailer. It has to be removed from your bait, so you can't have vegetation in your bait anymore. Basically, it's just a sanitation process, if you will, that these fishermen and other water-based recreational users need to be sure that they're not the ones that move NANS from one water body to another. That being said, it's really nice, and again, the problems other states have is that the more contaminated water bodies you have, the more likely you are to move something from that contaminated water body to another. So it's almost a domino effect, and we'd like to keep as many of our water bodies free of ANS as possible, because then you don't have that potential to move something from that water body to another body, water body. And so the need to be vigilant is certainly there, but it's also nice to not have a lot of contaminated water bodies, because then you just don't have quite as much likelihood that things will be moved.
He's Fred Reichman. I'm Doug Lear. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live as we talk about aquatic nuisance species. The first part of the program, we talked about what they are, and we moved into what's being done to prevent the spread, to prevent the initialization of aquatic nuisance species into new waters in North Dakota. And I mentioned that we went from information and education to rules and regulations to the law. And part of the law, that aspect of it, from enforcement from game wardens, is checkpoints, similar to what's done for checkpoints for fish and game violations in terms of over limits and illegal transportation. There's checkpoints for aquatic nuisance species. That's definitely something that has come on the scene in the last few years as another tool to hopefully spread awareness and document and reduce potential violations of those aquatic nuisance species regulations that we talked about, right, Fred?
Yeah, exactly, and that's certainly a good point. We have a lot of non-residents coming into North Dakota, particularly to fish, and particularly from the east, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and those states have a lot more problems, Minnesota in particular, and we get a lot of Minnesota anglers over here. Minnesota has some very strict rules and regulations too, which helps, but, and so yeah, we've tried to promote that we have the regulations in effect. We want to make sure that they don't violate, and yes, we want to make sure that our wardens are checking some of those boats, at least, that are coming in from the east to make sure, and other parts of the country, to make sure that they're not bringing unwanted ANS with them.
The bottom line when it comes to aquatic nuisance species is really pretty simple. It's all of our responsibility. It's not the responsibility of the Game and Fish Department, not the responsibility of the resorts, the lake associations, not the responsibility of one individual. We're all in this together, and I don't think anyone would like to roll the dice on the future, especially when you look at how well our fisheries are holding out right now in terms of fisheries health. We have a Save Our Lakes program. We've had some great work done with bait in terms of bait regulations and what is legal for bait. It's been a lot of work to get to this point, and unfortunately, the work is never, ever going to stop. Vigilance and prevention are two really big words when it comes to aquatic nuisance species. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. A Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale is up next. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Just a couple of moments, we'll be bringing you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale as she updates us on where people are going, what they're doing outdoors, and understanding leading into it that the Red River, the high water, just a tough, tough time for anybody that likes to fish the Red River. And not a surprise, because we go through this, it seems like, every year, that we have floods and then maybe a short window of decent access on the Red River. We go through a spring rise. This year, there wasn't as much of a spring rise, but nonetheless, hitting flood stage on the Red River once again, making the boating access almost impossible and the fishing access very, very difficult. And then CJ Johnson will be bringing us a Minnesota Outdoors report as well a little bit later on, still to come. Speaking of Minnesota, I get a kick out of lists. I've always been a list guy, whether it's economics, sports, or the outdoors. It gives you something to talk about. And I heard earlier this week that Duluth, Minnesota was named the best outdoors town in America. Duluth beat out Provo, Utah. And they did it kind of like an NCAA tournament where they had 64 cities in six rounds. It was like bracket style. In earlier rounds, Duluth beat out Columbia, Missouri, Athens, Ohio, La Crosse, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, and Asheville, North Carolina. So Outside Magazine basically put this to a social media type vote. And fortunately, Duluth had the backings of Governor Mark Dayton, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Al Franken, all on Twitter urging people to vote Duluth for the number one outdoors town. I have been to Duluth. Honestly, it's been a long time. But if you're planning an outdoors trip, an outdoors excursion, I'm not sure that it begins and definitely ends with Duluth. I will not discount what Outside Magazine through the social media vote was afforded. But I can also say that I probably hold more regard outdoors. A lot of times when like Outdoor Life will list the pheasant towns or there, because when you talk about outdoors, you think more Midwest and West. And maybe again, that's my own narrow-mindedness, because any of our regular listeners know that I'm not real well-traveled. In fact, I'm proudly not well-traveled. I spoke at a Kiwanis meeting earlier this week on Monday, and the point of my topic was exploring the outdoors in your own backyard, and whether that backyard is Fargo or Lemoore, if that town is Page or Thompson. There is so much, and just rattling off those, I think of Frog Point, east of Thompson on the Red River, a neat little access point on the Red River. I think of down near Lisbon, the only technical waterfall in North Dakota. There's a lot of stuff in your own backyard. So maybe I'm not giving Duluth enough credit, but I enjoy more when I see the towns of Bismarck and Minot and Aberdeen and Mitchell. And those tend to have a little more credit in my eyes as the outdoors town. But again, I can't discount, because I don't have a magazine, Outdoors Magazine listing Duluth, Minnesota. Congratulations to anyone that lives there, any fans, because I acknowledge that there is something visually drawing to Duluth as well. Speaking of the outdoors, let's get a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stock. You'll reread her work in Minnesota Outdoor News, in Dakota Country Magazine, and various other places as well. She connects with us each week to give us a little better idea of what's going on outdoors this week, Pat.
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Devil's Lake anglers are finding fair walleye success. Work the shallow bays in Pelican Lake or Six Mile Bay pitching crankbaits. Well, anglers might also want to try slip bobbers and leeches along the edges, or some spinners and lindy rigs with leeches or night crawlers in 8 to 15 feet are also starting to produce success. Work any of the bridges in the evening for walleye as well. And, as usual, the pike bite remains strong. Jamestown Reservoir is hit and miss for walleye, while Lake Ashtabula had improving success last weekend as it progressed from both boat and shore for a mix of species. Try spinner rigs with leeches or minnows throughout much of the lake in 6 to 11 feet. Spiritwood Lake also has fair to good bass success with some walleye mixed in. Walleye and pike across Richland, Sargent, Lemoore, Barnes, and McIntosh County lakes continue producing some good fish, but it's also off and on. Try trolling and covering the edges of drop-offs in the transition zones or structure using live bait rigs or gulp. On the rivers, the Red River flows increased early in the week and most docks became flooded. Check ahead before assuming that the access points are usable. Catfish anglers are finding better action in the evenings with cut bait goldeye or worm balls producing eater-sized fish. Work areas of low flows, backwater, or inflow confluences. However, high flows will be an ongoing challenge. Target feeder streams, creeks, and shallows. The Cheyenne River in West Fargo also has high flows, making fishing extremely slow in the main channel areas. Spots near lowhead dams and the diversion are better options. Try jigs and twister tails, or jigs and minnows for walleye. You might want to try spinner baits for smallmouth bass in the eddies and current edges. Out west, the Missouri River and Lake Oahe have better activity south of the Bismarck-Mandan area around Cattail, Langlers, and Four Mile Bays. Fort Rice area is slower, though. However, the Washburn area is producing some activity. The Tail Race is also producing some walleye from boats using jigs and minnows, spinners and night crawlers, crankbaits, or plastics. anglers are finding good numbers of small fish. The chutes are producing an occasional nice-sized walleye and some trout, salmon, and catfish. Anglers are also finding a decent smattering of a mix of species from the shore along the rocks, dry crankbaits or live bait. Lake Sakakawea remains hit and miss throughout the east end, try 6 to 11 feet, with most anglers focusing on Douglas or Stanky Bays, using jigs or spinners and bottom bouncers with minnows. There's continued pike success. Look for some smallmouth bass and pike from shore with an occasional walleye using live bait. And finally, Lake Audubon remains fair for walleye.
And we do always appreciate the updates from Pat Stockdale, and also understanding and realizing that those reports change from minute to minute, hour to hour, and day to day. But it does give you an idea of where people have been going and what they have been finding. Shoot me an email. It's outdoorslive@gmail.com. Outdoorslive@gmail.com. Don't forget, this program is podcast. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris as he podcasts this at kfgo.com as well. CJ Johnson with the Minnesota Outdoors Report up next on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the last shot for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. And just a couple of moments, we're going to hook up with CJ Johnson to get a Minnesota Outdoors Report. I want to go through and remind people that legal live bait fish for fishing in North Dakota, because as we get closer and closer to the 4th of July, I know we get more and more people that may just fish once out of the year or wind up at somebody's lake cabin and decide that we're just going to go fishing, and you grab a minnow trap and decide that you're going to start fishing or something. And that's sort of, there are only a few legal live bait fish. We're talking about for minnows, for people that are going fishing. If you want to fish with minnows, the only legal live bait fish, fathead minnows, that's the most common that you're going to find. Sticklebacks and creek chub. Sticklebacks are a kind of a rougher fish. They're not really used for that good of bait, but they're so often found with fathead minnows and tough to get them out of there. You can use, on the Red River, you can use white suckers on the Red and Bois de Sioux River. And then they'll also should remind you that there's 23 state waters where it is illegal to use any live bait fish. Check the regulations, check ahead before you just decide to start using some minnows. It falls on the angler. And we've come a long ways in our fisheries across North Dakota in terms of cleaning them up and people dumping bait buckets. Folks, it is part of the reason why our fisheries are doing much better now than 20 years ago, than 30 years ago. People were dumping bait buckets and people were using dirty bait, and you had bullheads showing up all over the place and had to go through and eradicate the bullheads. Very time consuming. And when people would dump their bait buckets again, it was just a tough circle. So make sure that you're checking the regulations, and make sure if you've got friends or family just traveling out to do some fishing that they are up to date on the legal live bait fish as well. And now for a closer look at what's going on outdoors in Minnesota. We call in our good friend CJ Johnson. He is a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. CJ Johnson is a Lisbon, North Dakota native and spent his career covering the outdoors of Minnesota. And he joins us each week. CJ, how's things looking outdoors in Minnesota this week, my friend?
Well, not too bad. If you can look from underneath your rain poncho, we're slowly getting out of the monsoon season, I think, in Minnesota. But to look around the state, the fishing is improving, believe it or not, rain or no rain. And let's look at the Lake of the Woods. Joe Henry up there, he says high water only seems to fill the buckets faster this past week. Joe says jigging is still the go-to method for walleyes and meter-sized fish. He says to try Twin Islands, Zippo Bay, Morris Point, over at Lighthouse Gap, all of them down about 18 to 20 feet. You tip that jig with a frozen shiner. In the Rainy River, Joe reports walleyes in 15 to 18 feet of water. There he says use some heavy jigs because of the strong current and tip those with a frozen shiner. And hot colors up Lake of the Woods seem to be gold, pink, orange, green, or chartreuse. The Ely Chamber of Commerce says as water temps continue to rise, so does the walleye action. Many of the folks up there are starting to have more success using leeches and crawlers right now, in addition to minnows. while the jig and minnow fishing still continues to be probably the most productive. If you want to keep some leeches and crawlers with you, it's a lot easier, especially for you're going into some backcountry adventures where you pack the Indus in the water over in the Ely area. Northern pike up there have become more aggressive. They're readily right now striking spoons and spinnerbaits, especially if we work right along the weed edges and just off rocky points. Nathan Campbell in Park Rapids says there's a high rate of catch in the past week. Peak fishing hours, light to about 9:30 in the morning, then from 7:30 p.m. to when it gets dark. Kind of normal for walleyes. Sunfish, crappies, minnows, and crayfish are all attracted to weedy areas. That's where they hide right now. This now, in turn, attracts those hungry walleyes to the weeds early morning and late afternoon when they can use their low-light vision to have a nice meal. So guess where you're going to find them? Yes, indeed. Open the weedy areas. It's best. Emily Schneider up in the Otter Tail Lakes country say they had a rainy couple of days in Otter Tail Lakes, but the sun is starting to shine at times, and the weather is perfect for fishing. Walleyes are being found in depths of 10 to 20 feet using jakes, minnows, leeches, and conners. All of working right now. Northern pike are swimming after sucker minnows and spoons and weed lines, 10 to 15 feet of water there. Use leeches or minnows in depths of 5 to 7 feet. There in the Otter Tail Lakes, Country Lakes, you're going to find the bass. Christofferson's bait and tackle up in Alexandria says leeches and night crawlers are the best walleye options, down about 10 to 15 feet. Especially on Reno Lake, Lake Mary, Lake Lahontadu, Oscar Lake, and Lake Darling. All of those in the Alex area are really good fishing lakes. Quality bait and tackle over in Detroit Lakes, they say work the shoreline to about 10 feet out for panfish on Lakes Melissa, Deadshot Bay, Sally, Little Detroit, and Big Detroit. Walleyes are hitting live bait drakes tipped with leeches or crawlers in about 10 to 16 feet of water on all of those lakes right now. Bass and pike fishing is consistent on most of the lakes as well. But Doug, I remember when I was a boy back in Lisbon hearing my dad talk about a local fisherman in the area. I was pretty young, but I was very interested. And he said no one in town could catch any fish except this one man. He could catch fish every single time.
Hmm.
Well, sir, the sheriff in Ransom County heard about the guy and asked him how he did it. So he said, well, I'll take you fishing tomorrow. And they did, I guess. They went out in the middle of the lake up just north and west of Lisbon there on the Cheyenne River. And once they got there, the sheriff threw his line in the water, and the other man took out his big tackle box, opened it up, took out a stick of dynamite, lit it, threw it in the water.
Uh-oh. Whoa.
Well, after the explosion, the fish, of course, started floating to the top, and the man took out his net and started picking up the fish. Well, needless to say, the sheriff says, you know that type of fishing is illegal? Well, the guy looked at the sheriff for a second, then he reached into the tackle box, took that nose, stick of dynamite, and lit it, and laid it down alongside the sheriff. Then he said, you got a fisher talk. Whoa, remember, fishing's always great. Yes, you got to work that.
No doubt about it. We keep it legal here on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Oh, CJ Johnson, we always appreciate the insight, the updates from the lakes and the fishing of Minnesota, and the humor as well. We appreciate your access and information. Thanks so much for your time, my friend.
My pleasure, Doug.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He's the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Without Bob Harris's help, this program would not exist. So until next time, we'll be right back with you Monday morning at 6:20 with an Outdoors Live update, myself and the Big Kahuna Monday through Friday. And then Jack and Sandy on Thursdays at 1:35, we take your phone calls there. And until next weekend, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.